S. Long pause. Well, in the beginning I noticed another guide began dropping in on our study sessions. We learned his name was Duatek. He had been invited by my guide Ero to observe us for a while. Dr. N. Did Duatek drop in at random during all phases of your work activities at that time? S. No, he came only during the structural periods. Dr. N. And what was the nature of your structural work then? S. Oh, you know, the use of energy in structural composition. I like to sculpt matter into utilitarian designs. Dr. N. I seconds. Well, I'll come back to that. Tell me, did Duatek participate in your group activities during his visits to the old cluster? S. No, he was an observer. He watched each of us carefully during the structural periods. Occasionally, he would ask one of us specific questions about how the work we were engaged in was coming along and if we felt an affinity toward the work. Dr. N., give me an idea of your feelings about Duatek at this time and his attitude toward you. S., I took to him right away. I think he saw that I really enjoyed what we were doing. Dr. N., then what happened with you and Duatek? S., after a while, three more lifetimes, a few of us were invited to go with him for short periods to a new group that was being formed. I remember wanting Hyanth to come, so we could be together. Dr. N., is Hyanth someone important to you? S., yes, my soulmate. Dr. N., and did she come with you into your new group? S., no, Hyanth did not take to this concentrated structural work all that much, and so she went to another group that was being formed. Dr. N., what did Hyanth object to about your new group? S., let me put it this way. I enjoy carving and shaping energy, experimenting with the relationships between planes and geometrical solids as building blocks of matter. Dr. N., and Hyanth. S., with pride, Hyanth is attracted to designing the beautiful aspects of environmental settings suitable for life. She is wonderful with scenery. While I might construct a fitting series of interconnecting mountains, she would be more interested in the plants and trees growing on the mountain. Dr. N., let me understand something. Do you just go to a physical world and build a mountain, with someone like Hyanth concentrating on life forms such as the trees? S., no, we work with physical worlds which are forming and set in motion the geologic forces which will build the mountain. My structural projects don't have to have life. Also, Hyanth doesn't create a forest of adult trees on worlds suitable for life. Herpiopi would design the cells which might eventually grow into the trees they want. Dr. N., does this mean your group and Hyanth's are separated? S., deep sigh, no, she is working nearby. Dr. N., what is it like being in a newly formed group? S., I don't think I will ever be totally apart from my old bunch. We complemented one another in so many ways. For thousands of years we helped each other in all our lives. Now, well, the mixture of new people is strange. We all feel the same way about our old groups. We come from different backgrounds and experiences. It takes some getting used to. Dr. N., would you go so far as to say there is rivalry between the members of your new soul group? S. Grins. No, not really, we all have the same motives to help each other make a contribution. The teasing and joking in our original groups is mostly gone. Everyone is serious. We each have our own talent, ideas and ways of doing things. We can see that Duatek is in the process of unifying us and we are learning to pay close attention to the abilities of each other. It is an honor to be here, but we still have weaknesses. Dr. N., what is yours? S., I am afraid of experimenting with my power. I like working in comfortable situations where I know I can design something perfectly. One of my new friends is just the opposite. He produces some good planetary stuff and then just jumps in and comes up with something wacky like screwing up the atmosphere so no life of any kind can breathe. He gets all tangled up with complex plans that are beyond his capabilities. Dr. N., can you explain to me how you personally start with a structural design project in class? S., by first visualizing what I want. I carefully put it together in my mind to get a clear blueprint. With my new group, we are learning how to use the proper quality of energy in proper composition to a large scale. With Aero, I worked in parts, while Bhutak wants everything to be an interconnecting whole. Dr. N, so the interrelation of energy elements is important to both the form and balance of your work? S, absolutely. Light energy begins the process, but there must be a harmony to the design, and it should have practical applications. Bursts out laughing. Dr. N, why are you laughing? S, I was thinking about a construction project with Hyanth. It was in our off time. Hyanth and I were kidding each other about being too self-important. She challenged me to build a small version of the elegant church where we were married in one of our lives. I was a stone cutter in that life, in medieval France. Dr. N, did you accept her challenge? S, still laughing, yes, on the condition she would help me. Dr. N, was that fair? I mean, she is not a specialist in structure. S, she isn't. Hyanth agreed to try and reproduce the stained glass windows and sculptures that she had loved. She wanted beauty and I wanted function. What a mess. I started by using flat beams of energy for the walls and was doing fairly well with the connecting arches, but the vaults and dome were a disaster. I called for Bhutak and he fixed everything. Dr. N, an often asked question, but this is all an illusion? S, laughing, are you so sure of that? This building will stand for as long as we wish it to be here for us. Dr. N, and then what? S, it will disappear. Dr. N, so where are you in your planetary studies? S, I am involved with creating particles of energy for rock shapes on a full planetary scale. Dr. N, is this where most of your attention is directed now? S, no, mostly I must still experiment alone with many smaller models of topography to learn how to integrate all the elements of matter. So many mistakes happen, but I enjoy the training. It's just very slow. Who gives souls the power to do what they do with matter? My subjects say they have the undeveloped capabilities, which are nurtured by teachers as their immediate source. They believe these masters receive the power they have from something higher. Yet ordinary souls themselves demonstrate smaller aspects of this greater power. I have spent years debating with myself about creation while trying to incorporate fragments of information about the cosmos from the designer souls. I have come to the conclusion that intelligent energy waves create subatomic particles of matter, and it is the vibrational frequency of these waves that causes matter to react in desired ways. Astronomers are mystified by the fact there is some unknown form of energy contributing to the total density of our universe acting against gravity to expand empty space. I have reported that a musical resonance of intelligent energy waves appears to play a role in cosmology. Many people in my cases explain that harmonics are associated with rhythmic values of energy notes which have ratios and proportions. My subjects who are structural souls say these designs relate to the formation of geometric shapes that float as elastic patterns, which contribute to the building blocks of a living universe. The geometry of space was exemplified by a client quote on page 135 and in case 44. The masters of design have enormous influence on creation. I'm told they are capable of bridging universes that seem not to have a beginning or end, exacting their purposes among countless environmental settings. Carried to its logical conclusion, this would mean these masters, or grandmasters, would be capable of creating the spinning gas clouds of galactic matter which started the process of stars, planets and eventual life in our universe. I am certain there is intelligent thought behind the formation of all animate and inanimate objects. This observation comes from souls who use their light energy for conceiving, designing, and then manipulating the molecules and cell structure of living matter which possess the physical properties they want in finished form. In my last case, I learned that the artistic designer soul of Hyanth formed full-grown trees in the spirit world to see if the finished product was appropriate, and then worked backward down to the seedlings and finally to the tree cells. This is one process of creating matter for functional use. I also indicated an example of this sort of energy training in case 35, with the creation and alteration of mice. My next case is another illustration of those souls who work with living organisms. These designer souls are the biologists and botanists of the spirit world, and they say that extraterrestrial life exists on billions of planets. I have an extensive file on souls who have incarnated on other worlds and souls who have traveled to a variety of strange worlds for both study and recreation between their lives on Earth. Case 59. This is a distinctive case concerning a designer soul called Kala. As our session progressed, my subject spoke to me about a recent planetary assignment involving the need to adjust a problem with the ecosystem that was not going to be corrected by evolutionary adaptation. Before this case, I had not expected that souls would return to a planetary site for modifications of an existing environment, since that would mean their designs were fallible. It was revealing for me to learn Kala's experience involved the altering of the molecular chemistry of an existing creature in a controlled experiment. When clients describe their soul experiences with life on other worlds, I try to learn about the galactic location, the planet's size, orbit, the distance it lies from its star, atmospheric composition, gravitation and topography. I suppose my background as an amateur astronomer gives me an additional incentive to learn these details. Nonetheless, many clients find it annoying to try and answer astronomy questions they consider distracting and irrelevant. In our physical universe, we know of 100 billion galaxies. Each of these silvery islands, separated by vast distances in light years, moves within the dark sea of space and contains countless billions of suns with the likelihood of life-supporting planets. Because my celestial references have little meaning to most subjects in hypnosis, and the worlds they talk about are so far away from Earth's quadrant in space, I frequently just move on rather than impede the session. Kala tried to explain to me that her creation design training class went to a planet nowhere near Earth. She called this world Jaspir and said it was in a double, binary, star system orbiting a hot yellow star nearby, with a dull red larger star much farther away. I was also told Jaspir was a little larger than Earth but had smaller oceans. She added this world was semi-tropical with four moons. After a little encouragement, Kala was willing to discuss her work involving a strange creature that has certain odd similarities to animals on Earth. The average client with experience on an alien planet has feelings of reluctance about giving me information they consider to be privileged. I have mentioned this fact before in other areas of my spiritual research. Subjects clam up when they feel they should not be revealing knowledge entrusted to them, or that they are not intended to uncover in their current lives. This is particularly true with alien civilizations. It is frustrating for me to hear such statements as, "Neither you nor I are supposed to know about such places." With Kala, I explained how important it was for both of us to know her capabilities as a soul, rather than my simply being an inquisitive investigator. Another effective hypnosis technique I might use to get around client blocks towards speaking about other worlds is to ask, "Have you known any fascinating alien life forms you care a great deal about?" This approach is irresistible to many souls who travel for work or play. "Dr. N. Kala, I would like to further explore what you have told me about your assignment to Jaspir. I think this would help me understand your specialty. Why don't you begin with your training class and how the project on Jaspir was presented?" S. The six of us have been assigned to work with some seniors, design masters, to deal with this world where runaway vegetation has threatened the food supply of the small land animals. "Dr. N. So, basically the problem on Jaspir involves the ecosystem." S. Yes, the thick vines, a voracious vink-like bush. It grows so fast it kills those plants needed for the food supply. There is little space left for the land creatures of Jaspir to graze. "Dr. N. And they can't eat the vines?" S. No, and that's why we went to Jaspir on this assignment. "Dr. N. Reacting too quickly, to rid the planet of these vines?" S. No, they are indigenous to the planet and its soil. Dr. N. Well, then, what is the assignment? S. To create an animal which will eat the vines, to control the spreading of this bush which chokes off so much other vegetation. Dr. N. What animal? S. Laughing, it is the ranunculus. Dr. N. How are you going to do that with an animal that is not indigenous to Jaspia? S. By creating a mutation from an existing small four-footed animal and accelerating its growth. Dr. N. Kala, you can change the DNA genetic codes of one animal to create another? S. I could not do this by myself. We have the combined energy of my training class, plus the skillful manipulation of the two seniors who have accompanied us on this field trip. Dr. N. You use your energy to alter the molecular chemistry of an organism in order to circumvent natural selection? S. Yes, to radiate the cells of a group of the small animals. We mutate the existing species and make it much larger so it will survive. Since we don't have the time to wait for natural selection, we will also accelerate growth of the four-legged animal. Dr. N. Do you accelerate the growth of the mutation so that the ranunculus appears right away, or do you accelerate the size of the creature itself? S. Both. We want the ranunculus to be big and we want this evolutionary change to take place in one generation. Dr. N. How many Earth years will this take? S. Pause. Oh, 50 years or so. To us it seems like a day. Dr. N. What did you do to the small animal who will become a ranunculus? S. We keep the legs and hairy torso, but it all will be larger. Dr. N. Tell me about the finished product. What does a ranunculus look like? S. Laughing. A. Large curving nose down around the mouth. Big lips. Huge jaws. Massive forehead. Walks on four legs with hooves. About the size of a horse. Dr. N. You said you kept the hair of the original animal. S. Yes, it's all over the ranunculus, long reddish brown hair. Dr. N. What about the brain of this animal? Is it greater or less than a horse? S. The ranunculus is smarter than a horse. Dr. N. He sounds like something out of a Dr. Seuss children's book. S. Grins. That's why it's so much fun to think about him. Dr. N. Has the ranunculus made a difference on Jaspia? S. Yes, because he is many times the size of the original animal, and has other alterations, such as his huge jaw and body strength. He is really eating up the vines. The ranunculus is a docile creature with no natural predators and a voracious eater, like the original animal. That's what the seniors wanted. Dr. N. What about his reproduction on this planet? Do the ranunculus multiply quickly? S. No, they reproduce slowly. That is why we had to create quite a number of ranunculus after we programmed the desired genetic characteristics. Dr. N. Do you know how this experiment ended? S. Jaspia is now a more balanced world of plant eaters. We wanted the other animals to thrive as well. The vines are now under control. Dr. N. Do you plan eventually to have highly intelligent life on Jaspia? Is that what this is all about? S. Vaguely, perhaps the seniors do, I have no way of knowing. Explorers, one consider most people who gain experience in different environments outside the spirit world between lives to be a type of explorer soul. They may be souls whose personal development requires in-depth experience on different worlds or simply recreational travelers. I also have clients who engage in temporary work assignments between lives that involve travel. Explorer souls in training travel to physical and mental worlds in our universe and even into other dimensions. From the accounts I hear about, I picture a full-fledged explorer soul as a highly specialized, non-incarnating being who seeks out suitable training sites for the less experienced souls and then eventually leads them to these regions. Their work ethic is one of reconnaissance. When souls who are still incarnating on Earth move from the spirit world to other locations, these trips seem to be from point to point with no stops along the way. My clients say that in their travels to other places they do not perceive the trips to be long or short. This is illustrated by the following two quotes. From the spirit world to a physical world, it is like a door opens and you see the walls of what appears to be a hallway, a tube, whirling past on either side. Then another portal-type doorway opens and you are there. When I pass into another dimension to a mental world, I am like a piece of static flowing through a TV screen into magnetic zones structured by pure thought. The voids are composed of large, pulsating fields of energy. I feel the power of this energy more than when I go to a material universe, because we must adapt our wave resonance to existing conditions in order to easily pass through. I want to keep my energy tight, so I don't get lost. These trips are not instantaneous, but almost. Most of the souls I work with who explore other worlds are led by instructors. Also, I find those subjects who travel interdimensionally are not limited to souls in an advanced state of development. We saw this in the hide and seek game. They seem to be adventuresome souls who relish travel, the challenges of different environments, and new forms of self-expression. I have been told of existences where intelligent beings reside within blocks of matter so dense it is described as resembling the composition of silver and lead. Others tell me about realms appearing as shining glass surfaces amid towers of crystal. There are physical worlds consisting of fire, water, ice or gas where all manner of intelligent life thrives. These spheres within which explorer souls move have light, pastel or dark environments. However, the dark habitats do not bear the sinister connotations that people associate with regions of foreboding. The explorer souls do not emphasize a polarity of light and darkness in their travels as much as other elements. These could include a restless or serene environment, thin or heavy density, physical or mental domains, and conditions lending themselves to what has been described as purified or coarse intelligence. Traveler souls who move into different realms of cosmic consciousness must learn to align their energy with symmetry to local conditions within these demarcations. Explorer guides can take souls on brief visits to higher dimensional levels to raise their consciousness. In the minds of many subjects, these trips don't last long, and this is probably to avoid overwhelming younger souls. In the last chapter, under recreational activities in the spirit world, 1. Said that soul travel often involves working vacations. These visits are usually to physical worlds for souls from Earth and can last from a few days up to hundreds of years in Earth time. I receive a great deal of information about other worlds from discussions of a client's R&R periods between lives. My hypnosis subjects are usually more relaxed about giving me details of their recreational travel to other worlds, as demonstrated by the next case. Case 60, Dr. N, what activity are you most engaged in between lives when you are not reviewing karmic lessons with your soul group? S, well, I do take trips, but they are rather personal. 1, don't think one should talk about this sort of thing, Dr. N, I don't wish to make you uncomfortable with telling me things which you feel you shouldn't, pause. Just let me ask if there is some exotic place you travel to between lives which gives you fond memories? S. Reacts quickly with a broad smile, oh, yes, to Brol. Dr. N. Lowering my voice, is this a world where you incarnate? S. No, I remain as a soul because I only go to Brol to rejuvenate my spirit, and it's fun to take trips here because it is like Earth with no people. Dr. N. In a reassuring tone, I see, so you mostly go for rest and recreation. Why don't you tell me about the physical aspects of Brol compared to Earth? S. It is smaller than Earth and colder because the sun is further away. It has mountains, trees, flowers and fresh water but no oceans. Dr. N. Who brings you to Brol? S. A master navigator by the name of Jumu. Dr. N. Would this be the same type of soul as an explorer who is a specialist in travel, or someone like your own guide? S. Jumu is an explorer all right, we call them navigators, pause, but our guides can come with us too if they want. Dr. N. I understand completely. Tell me, do you usually go alone or with other members of your soul group? S. We could come alone, but the navigators usually bring a few members of different groups. Dr. N. What do you think of Jumu?
S. More relaxed. Jumu likes being a tour director for those of us who are taking breaks from our normal activities. He says it gives us perspective.
Dr. N. That sounds interesting. I know you are anxious to explain why Brol is great ton, so why don't we begin by my asking you about the animal life on this planet?
S. R. No fish, frogs, snakes, no amphibians.
Dr. N. Oh? Why is that, do you think?
S. Pause and a little confused.
I don't know, except those of us who come here want to be involved with a special land animal? Who is?
Stops,
Dr. N. Coaxing, an animal you remember?
S.
Laughs, our favorite, the Ardor. They are like a small bear with cat features all rolled into one. Wrapping her arms around her sides. The Ardor is a wonderful, furry, cuddly, peaceful animal which is really not an animal as we know it.
Dr. N. What does this mean?
S. The Ardor is very intelligent and affectionate.
Dr. N. How does their intelligence compare to humans?
S. That's difficult to say. It is not higher or lower than humans, just different.
Dr. N. What is most different?
S. They have absolutely no need for conflict or competition among their kind. This is why we are brought to this peaceful setting. It gives us hope for a better future on Earth. What Earth could become if we all got our act together.
Dr. N. What do you and your friends do on Brol?
S. We come and play with these gentle creatures, who seem to have a connection for souls from Earth needing rest. We materialize our energy in a minor way to interact with the Ardors.
Dr. N. Can you be more specific about this process?
S. Well, we assume transparent human shapes to hug them. We float into their minds, so unearthly and subtle. After life on a hard physical world such as Earth, they heal us in this setting. The Ardor is a soothing creature which motivates us to see what is possible with the human body. The setting for R&R is as much of a factor on these trips of exploration by souls as the attributes of the alien life forms they find there. While in trance, my subjects have great empathy for the unspoiled planets which are similar to Earth but with no people. They look upon these places as their own special playgrounds. I don't see nearly as many clients with memories of going to mental worlds. This is natural. We are beings used to bright light and physical dimensions. The following quote is another example of interaction with a life form purely for recreation. We are taken by the travelers to the place of the Quigleys. They are the size of a muskrat, fat and fluffy with a forehead similar to a bull-nosed dolphin. The Quigley has big, rounded ears and straight-out whiskers. They have the IQ of perhaps a smart dog. They are devoted and happy animals who love us. Their planet is an ancient, mystical land of gently rolling hills and valleys carpeted with flowers and small, delicate trees. It is very bright here and there is an inland body of fresh water. We relax and play in this world of perfect peace. If we have dreams of being tall giants, very short elfine appearing beings, or having the bodies of water and air creatures, this could mean these dreams reflect unconscious memories of a prior incarnation on another world. However, it is also just as likely we were associated with this type of entity on R&R visits to some exotic world. Much of our mythology about strange creatures may also stem from these memories. I should add that most people have dreams of being able to fly. This probably relates more to our memories of floating around as a soul in a disembodied state than being a flying creature in a former life. In order to appreciate the symbiotic relationship between an earthly soul who has had associations with other forms of life, let's examine the next excerpt from one of my cases who is a hybrid soul. I refer the reader to my comments about hybrids on page 100. In the quote below of a fond memory, my client became very nostalgic. Sometimes a hybrid soul will tell me about being taken by an explorer soul between lives to a world similar to that of their first physical incarnations. Between my lives on Earth,
One visit to Waterworld called Anchorium, which is so restful after a difficult life on land. Anchorium has only one land mass, the size of Iceland. I come with a few of my friends who also have an affinity to water. We are brought by an explorer guide who is familiar with this region.